Hey everybody, I'm Chris.
Hey, I'm Bill.
Have you ever asked yourself, what is your superpower?
Everyone has a superpower. Most people just don't know what it is.
We're going to help you uncover it.
This podcast is all about helping people figure out what their truly unique superpower is.
Superpowers, what's yours?
Hello and welcome to another Superpowers podcast. We're still in quarantine. We're still, not out and about, but we have a really exciting guest here with us today that we're super, super, super excited about. Chris, why don't you tell us a little bit about Matt?
Take it away. Welcome back to another episode of the Superpowers podcast with my wonderful co-host, Bill Weiss.
My name is Weiss.
I know.
We've known each other for fucking 10 years.
Dude, that was on purpose.
Okay. You would make me Jewish. Not that I have anything against that, but like it's Wise, not Weiss.
I know. I can't help myself. We're here with Matt Lombardi coming up from beaming up from Massachusetts. Bill, we will have other folks from Boston, but I promise not all of our guests.
Matt, I just want to let you know, Matt and I don't really know each other. This is the first time we're meeting, actually. So, Chris is kind of like the producer. He gets all of the guests for the most part. I'm kind of the on-air talent in this production. And, we've done 8 podcasts so far in the second season. 6 are people from the New England area. It's kind of getting a little ridiculous.
Are all the intros this smooth?
Yeah. We'll end up editing a lot of this out, I guess.
All right. Without further ado, Matt Lombardi, up from Massachusetts, Boston native, went to Boston College and played college hockey onto his professional hockey career, absolute fitness junkie, CrossFit wizard, has been a serial entrepreneur the last few years, and now co-founder and co-CEO of Beam, a CBD company, a direct-to-consumer CBD company. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Co-founder, co-CEO. I'm not sure where the extra co's came in.
What? I think it's just that's what you guys co-founder. Call yourselves. You guys are co-CEOs.
You're adding co-founder, co-CEO. Anyways, thanks for having me, guys.
off to a great start. You can see what happens when Bill and I don't do a show for a couple of weeks. Just a little bit of rust to kick off.
Yeah.
Lombardi, how are we doing up there in Massachusetts over the last couple of weeks? How are you holding up?
Doing well. It's kind of like New Year's. Everybody's like, oh, how's your New Year going? That first month or so after the New Year hits, it's kind of like this. Every conversation's, I kind of have my typical thing is I'm doing well, all things considered, and just trying to make the most of it.
Bill, you always like to ask recently, since we've gone virtual, you're kind of 3 or 4 up or down, more or less of. I'm going to let you launch into that.
Yeah, want me to do that? Okay. So Matt, yeah, we do. You either go up, down, or kind of the same. So since we've been, kind of like sticking at home, and because you're a ex-professional athlete, I'm going to start off with exercise, up or down. Oh.
Do I speak or just give you a thumbs up?
You can do either one. You can do either
okay,
one.
I'll do both. Okay.
And now, who are you with? Are you with a significant other, parents, your dog? Okay. All right. So I'm not
perfect.
Normally, I ask if sex is up or down. I'm going to refrain from that one. What about alcohol intake?
I would say like this, but that pretty much no alcohol. I don't really drink.
Got it. And what about
shocking, like, Chris? Right?
Shocking.
Yeah. So I'm getting the sense you're like a staple of health. So no junk food, limited alcohol, working out every day.
I'd much rather like for me, I'd much rather like pizza and eat something like that versus alcohol. I'd say like 85-90% of my diet is pretty, I don't want to say strict, but it's just pretty disciplined. And then I'm not afraid to have pizza and stuff like that, cookies. Yep. But yeah, alcohol has just never been, maybe a glass of wine here and there.
But Matt, you would never post a cookie or a slice of pizza on Instagram. You would never.
Yeah, I definitely would. I definitely would. Really? I try. Yeah, I try to. What you see is what you get. So if I do have pizza, I definitely wouldn't be afraid to share it. Definitely not trying to have the perfect image or anything.
And is it true that Tom 12 stole your regimen, the whole fitness thing?
I'm not allowed to talk about that, but those are correct rumors.
Okay.
Obviously kidding.
So exercise up, alcohol flat, sex pretty much non-existent, at least with somebody else. And what about kind of?
I'm glad my headphones are in my mom's upstairs.
Okay, we're gonna cut that out for mom. So what about work? You know, are you working more or working less?
Kevin, my co-founder, we've been working more than we've ever been. We're a CBD company, wellness company, and we are all e-com too. So, we've been really, really fortunate to have a very busy last couple of months during this. It hasn't been easy, just for manufacturing and just fulfilling things and just all the logistics and also trying to be supportive and do some good things. You know, we're not obviously going to the office, but yeah, it's been crazy. We've been working more than we've ever been, which is obviously great. And I'm sure Chris is happy to hear that as a investor.
Nice. All right. So this is the Superpowers podcast. We like to uncover, you know, kind of what is, you know, deep down, what is your unique superpower? We like to kind of like understand the person before we get into all the accomplishments. You know, Matt, why don't you give us a little bit of a background on where you grew up, what you were like as a kid, what your parents did, stuff like that.
Yeah. And I'm really excited. I'm curious if you guys conclude with me. But so I grew up in the Boston area. And it was funny. I have two older sisters. One of my sisters started the hockey trend in my family. And so I got into hockey. And I'd say pretty young. Hockey just became my main focus, my main sport. I went to Dexter in prep school, or for middle school, which is a prep school in Brookline. And again, hockey is where I really excelled. And then I went to Thayer my freshman year. It's kind of an interesting story with hockey. And I made the varsity team as a freshman. I barely played my freshman year. And just for a lot of reasons, just wasn't the right fit for me. And so I started, I had a really close friend that I would play summer tournaments with. And he went to Governor's Academy up in Byfield, and his dad and my dad were close. And he just said, you know, you should just come take a look, come take a look at Gov, see what you think. For me, it would be a boarding school. And ended up really enjoying my visit and really liking and bonding with some of the guys when I went to visit there. And I remember, it's really funny, it's one of my more vivid memories too as a younger hockey player. I remember going to BC hockey game, and we had season tickets all throughout when I was really, really little, all through high school.
Yep.
And I remember being at a game with my dad, and I remember at the time I wasn't playing at Thayer, and I was kind of in this like, what the F moment with hockey. You know, I was young too, but just kind of feeling like just frustrated. I wasn't handling, not playing well. I felt like I was good enough to play, but for whatever reason, just like wasn't, you know, getting the ice time and things like that. I remember having him just like looking and watching this game into my head, just really thinking like, man, I just want to play BC so bad.
Wow.
And not really seeing a path to that at all at the time. I mean, I was like, if I can't even play my varsity high school team, how the heck would I ever play at BC? But that was my goal, and I had that goal. And what was really cool is my friend that I just mentioned, he committed to BC as well. I think right before I transferred to Govs, or the year after. And it was so cool. I ended up just training with him, Ben Ferriero. I ended up training with him and his two younger brothers. His dad would train us up in Essex, Mass. We'd work out all morning. We'd go skate up at the ice center in Salem, New Hampshire. And then we'd dig clams and fish in the afternoon in Essex during the summers. Sounds like what?
Everyone from New England like digs clams or hunts lobsters or something.
Yeah.
We eat what we kill with our bare hands. Matt, I got two boys, as you know, we're a hockey family. What's the trigger? It's hockey curiosity, but I think it's what all young boys and girls who love sports, like, what is the delta between getting to that next level? Obviously you went professional for a short period afterwards, but you know, what do you think the composition of like, you're born with it versus you're willing to, you know, work in the driveway and do the OT, like what is that you know, only a small percentage kind of graduate to that next level. And then I'm also curious, yeah, with your sister. I live in a town where it's a big hockey town, even though I'm from Boston, as you know, but we're the Rye Rangers. So it's kind of confusing that my kids wear Boston Bruins and Rangers gear at the same time. I let them get away with it. But really huge advocates of girls in hockey, lots of girl hockey players. Mm-hmm. Curious to know kind of that, a little bit about your sister and kind of her journey as well. So either one of those in what order.
Yeah. I'll start with my sister. I mean, so, you know, going back to then, women's hockey was so different, right? You know, I think the more elite female players at some point started playing on boys' teams. I think now women's hockey has grown so much that you don't necessarily need to do that. I still think you see a little bit of it here and there, but like the youth leagues and everything are so much stronger now. Yeah. It's a little bit of a different path, I think, than a lot of, you know, women, girls that played collegiate hockey went than, you know, what you might have to do today. For me, one of the biggest, I mean, just my biggest real, I think I was, you know, I was born with some good athletic genes, just in the sense of my build and just some natural athletic ability. I'm a visual learner and I could pick up things, you know, whether it be skating technique, working on my edges, you know, being able to watch my coach or someone that I'm with and replicating what they do just because I'm a visual person, which helped. But so much of my development really just came from sheer practice. And specifically, I really became almost obsessed with this when I was in college. It was my last 2 years of college and then my last couple years playing pro. I had the perfect setup in my parents' basement. Half the basement was all tiled. The other half, I collected every gym piece of equipment you need as a hockey player. So it was like your hockey oasis. And I go down, I'd rip pucks, and I had a big golf net so I wouldn't break any windows to catch the pucks. And I would keep track. I would shoot 15,000, 20,000 pucks every summer.
I got to get my kids.
And I'd keep track of it. I became obsessed with it. And, you know, one of my things I look back is like, I kind of wish I knew all of these things about practice and just like what to be doing in high school. But the amount of progress I shot in just my overall skill, my shooting, my skating, just from like really amping up. I mean, I'm sure you guys are familiar with the 10,000 hour rule. It's really just about practice. And I've done a lot of coaching too with high school kids and middle school kids and even college kids since I've stopped playing hockey. And probably been the biggest thing that I talk to them about is just becoming obsessed with practice and getting better. So there is obviously some innate things you can be born with, but I've seen it. And the way I say that is because I've experienced that through my own journey, even as an entrepreneur, but specifically with hockey. Shooting 20,000 pucks just in the off season, just in my basement, never mind all the on ice stuff I would do. My last few years playing minor league hockey, I had the best shot on my team, and I was always one of the best skaters. I didn't quite make it to the NHL and all these different things, and I stopped after concussion, but I saw those things transcend from all the practice I was putting in to just, you know, it's a whole nother thing, I think, when you look at like the Crosbys and the Boudreaux of the world and just how they can actually, you know, even like Brady, like how you can like see the game and just see it differently. I don't know there's some things there that are probably just like some good genes where you can just like be calm and see things differently. And I'm sure you can train your mind as well. But
or as they say, the game kind of slows down to a certain pace. What about the element? We haven't had that many professional athletes on the show, more successful people than you, but definitely no athletes. What about the team element, Matt? What did you learn from kind of, you know, the everything around what I grew up with sports and why I love my kids doing sports is that team element, the coaching, the discipline, the practice, and what did you kind of learn from that? And when do you think you actually started getting it? Because I think there's a difference of like wanting to score and all that versus like really appreciating all the other aspects of what team teaches you.
So there's two things that really come up. Mm-hmm. And I'll talk more just my experience at BC. So one, sports is just the ultimate metaphor for life. And then two, I really learned a lot about leadership. And the two things there is around leadership is I was really fortunate to play for Coach York and be part of a BC hockey team for 4 years. And my freshman year, we went to the national championship game and lost. My sophomore year, we went and won. My junior year, we didn't even make playoffs. And my senior year, we went and won again. So 3 out of the 4 years, we played in the national, not just the Frozen Four, but the national championship game. You know, we won multiple bean pots, we won multiple league championships, but obviously the Frozen Four stick out. And you start to see, like, so in the 2 years that we won and the 2 years that we didn't, you can start just to see, like, what were the common threads. And I don't say this just because one of them was my senior year, and I, Matt, Ben, and I as the captains by any means, but we really just modeled ourselves after what we thought really worked well our sophomore year, when we had Mikey, Matt, and Danny Bertram as our captains. And it really just becomes from, like, always a top down of really what we saw work was, like, really good leadership. And there were certain principles, again, that we saw were common threads. And then to one thing you just asked is just total buy-in from everybody. And I probably didn't fully learn that. I think till my junior year, again, I experienced probably the most adversity I had at the, through my 4 years at BC, in terms of just, like, playing and being a healthy scratch and just having a tough year. And then again, like, going on to a senior year, you know, playing every game, being one of the captains, you know, being fortunate to win a lot of games with the team. That year is when I really learned about just being a good teammate and really understanding how to handle and process things that could happen in your life. You know, at first, I remember my junior year, you know, I was kind of sulking. I was just sort of in a bad mood about not playing. And then I remember Father Tony, who was our team chaplain and just sort of like the team's mentor, pulled me aside. He picked me up every Thursday morning at 6:30 in the morning, which is insanely early for a college student. We went to Johnny's, which, Chris, I'm sure you're familiar with, the Newton Center.
Absolutely. Still there. Great diner.
Yeah. Great establishment. And we'd go, we'd have eggs and we'd chat. And he just coached me. We'd have a game plan. I almost like came up with a process on how to handle this adversity I was going through. And it almost became a blueprint for everything, or a framework, or like at least a base of, for everything I've had to deal with since. And, you know, those two things of sports, I think, is just, it's the ultimate life metaphor. Again, being a part of a team, working towards a goal, dealing with challenges, how do you deal with those? And then understanding leadership.
So hold on a second. So you're yet another Boston guy who doesn't have a Boston accent. So were you born and raised in Boston, or were you like born somewhere else?
No, I was. If my parents have Boston, it's more, people sometimes think I sound Canadian. It's probably...
You do sound Canadian.
Hockey. Yeah, I think it's because one of my roommates was a Canadian, and probably just a hockey thing.
You just picked it up. Yeah. Actually, yeah. If you're a hockey player, you got to, like, go with the herd and sound like a Canadian, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then, so the other thing I'm kind of sensing here is, like, you know, ninth grade, you made varsity, but didn't get a lot of ice time. You know, you get to BC, you were a healthy scratch a couple of times. Like, it seems like this is like a recurring theme, yet you played professional hockey for over 10 years. So eventually you figured it out. Just talk us through a little bit of that. Like, just, you know, how many times did you just want to potentially say, am I really, you know, is this really my future? You know, maybe I'm just not good enough. Maybe I'm really, really great and I'm part of the 1%, but I'm not part of the 0.01%.
Mm-hmm. So one, just, it happens often, but there was another Matt Lombardi that played hockey too. So he played in the NHL, he's from Canada. So we're different. He's probably a little bit of a better hockey player than I was. I think he played in maybe their national teams too and everything. But so he did play in the NHL for a while. I played in the minors with the Devils and the Penguins. Played 2 years, had a concussion, stopped playing. But to your question, though, I do acknowledge that I made it down a very small funnel for hockey. I mean, I was just sharing this, even just BC, even if I stopped playing hockey after school, that was my biggest goal growing up, was to play at BC. And I was really, I realized that, and I don't take that for granted. You know, I think, and part of it, when you're asking earlier, just like going back when I grew up, I think one of the best things that my dad did and my mom was they supported me, but I didn't have my dad drag me down into the basement to shoot pucks, even before college when I really became obsessed with everything, even more so then too. But he never dragged me down there. He supported me and helped me put the stuff down there that I asked him for, things that I thought I needed. And also too, like, mind you, this wasn't a sexy basement. This was nicknamed the dungeon. But I think what I learned from that was if you want to go do something, just go do it. And that probably was the greatest thing. And, you know, I look at some of my friends whose dads, you know, were coaches and they really knew a lot about hockey and things like that. Looking back now, I think that's probably one of the greatest things that he did. And he was also an entrepreneur. He had some really he was always in the waste industry. He's had some really successful trash companies, recycling and things like that. And I'm sure I get my entrepreneur bug from him, but I think that's what an entrepreneur is, right? You just go do it. You don't wait for someone to tell you or invite you or drag you down there. They don't pull you down there kicking, screaming. So, you know, with wanting to play BC, with wanting to play pro hockey after, I remember in my junior year too, going back when that was a really tough year, I remember sitting down with my dad at the Applebee's in Cleveland Circle right by BC and just talking about, like, do you want to transfer? Do you want to stay here? You know, what are you thinking? And we talked it through, and I remember just having that conversation. I never doubted that I wasn't not good enough. I was just sort of like this unfortunate position where it's like I was the guy that just happened to be sitting out. It wasn't so much that I couldn't play or anything like that. And even when I look at pro hockey, I have all the confidence that I could have played in the NHL. There's a lot of guys that don't make it to the NHL that can play at that level. It's just so hard. It's timing. It's, you know, who's the guy rooting for you. I think I never had a moment where I wanted to quit. It was always just like, this is probably my biggest realization too. And it happened post hockey, which when I look at hockey, I did look at it as a failure when I retired because I didn't make it to the NHL. And amongst all the great things at BC, not getting the NHL, I really categorized hockey as a failure. Really what I wanted out of hockey was to create this lifestyle and create a living and be this person that I wanted to be someone that people were inspired by, someone like people looked up to build a platform, to do something that I was insanely passionate about. And, you know, one of the coolest things I think that I realized so much was that I don't think that I quit on that goal. It was more I found another avenue to create and to become that person. And obviously right now it's Beam. Beam is, you know, lighting me up, I would say even more so than hockey ever did. And I can create and do all the things that I wanted to through this journey versus hockey.
Hey, Matt, real quick, yeah. There's one last thing on the kind of BC, two points, both for our audience. Mm-hmm. At the time that you were there, give sort of a comp or example of what BC hockey was to a sports franchise, college or NFL, just so our viewers understand how good the team was. And the only other question before we close out on that loop, unless Bill had another question, was where else did you look? You made it, you shared that BC was the goal, but you didn't know if BC was going to take you. Just curious to know other universities that you looked at or that you maybe worked at, but Yeah.
I mean, BC still is always one of the top programs. I'd say the last 5 years, there's been a couple years within there. I think this year, obviously, they had a really good team. You know, they're ready to make, I think, another good run to win the whole thing again. Unfortunately, everything got canceled. The year before that, I don't think they had one of those really weird years. They didn't make playoffs. They hadn't been in a Frozen Four in a few years. But when I was in school, they were in the Frozen Four, the championship game, 4 out of the 5 years. Before my freshman year, when I got there, they had lost to Wisconsin the year before. So 3 straight years in a row, they went to the championship game. My sophomore year is when we finally won. They also won again in 2012. So, I mean, they're like the Alabama.
There you go.
Yeah. Or, you know, the Patriots the last few years, too.
And then where else were you considering going to university?
I looked at Yale a lot, Northeastern, and that was kind of it, to be honest. Like and it's interesting with BC, I don't know if it's because they knew I wanted to go there so bad, but I was technically what you would call a recruited walk-on. So they didn't offer me any scholarship when I went there. I remember going in to see Coach York during my junior year, offering me a spot on the team, which, you know, it's relatively early to figure out your school, he just said, yeah, you're on the team. You have your spot. You know, you're just like anybody else. You're not going to have a scholarship. And again, like sort of touching back, like I didn't really learn how to deal with things that I didn't like very well until later on. And I remember just kind of being a little butthurt by that. And I remember him just patting me on the shoulder and be like, Matt, like, it's a good thing. Cheer up. once I had that, I remember going home, talking to my dad and my parents about it, and you know, say, hey, I'll support you if you want to go, and we'll figure that, you know, the tuition and that side of it out. But if that's what you really want to do, you know, all you need to do is get your foot in the door. And that was it. I didn't really care to look much elsewhere after that.
Yep.
And Matt, what did you study in school?
Hockey. I was in the business school, and I majored in marketing.
Got it. And what did your mom do growing up?
She was a nurse.
Wow. Interesting. How is she feeling right about now? I mean, nurses are like the new fire, are like the new firemen, like running into fires.
Yeah. Right now. I don't want to use the word lectured, but I get talked to frequently just about making sure that I'm washing my hands and doing the necessary things and being safe and smart.
Makes sense.
Okay, so you graduated BC, played professional hockey in the minor leagues. Like, you know, how long did you do that? You know, you mentioned you got a concussion, you know, which seems like, you know, people who get concussions don't just get one, and it kind of is a cyclical thing. So talk us through like that time of, you know, during your life.
So I was in the Penguins system at the time, and the puck came up the boards, and I kind of turned with it. And as I did, this guy's elbow came flying in, and, you know, I only have a half shield on, not a face mask anymore, and hit me right sort of in the side of the jaw. And I remember after the game just seeing this, like, light in the corner of my eye. And I was playing really well at the time, and they're, you know, wanting to keep, you know, getting called up, and things are going well. And so I just kind of kept hush-hush and just ignored it, didn't tell anybody. Then the next game I played, and I got hit in the boards, and I bent my wrist. I think it got bent down. It was the top hand of my stick. I'm a righty. Really hurt. Played the next game, asked the trainer to tape my wrist up. By the end of the game, I could barely hold my stick. And so this was two games after I got hit in the head. And I went to the trainer's room and just said, you know, I can't even hold my stick anymore. I got to, like, you know, I was talking about my wrist. I said, oh, by the way, like, my head's killing me. Like, the last few days I got hit when we played so-and-so. And that was the last game I ever played.
And that must have been really, really hard. The whole buildup of that journey, and then kind of recognizing there's a potential turning point.
Yeah, and that was halfway through the year, and I didn't play. That was my last game, so I didn't play the rest of the season. And then just went home when playoffs started, and it was really hard transitioning out of that. I mean, I kind of say I was like somewhat depressed those first 2 years after I was done playing hockey, trying to figure life out again. Like, all I knew. One was hockey, but all I knew was also doing stuff that I loved. And that was a tough, it was a tough transition.
Could you have gone back, or did you just know it was time to hang up the skates?
I thought about it, both the following year and even the second year after that. And it's just, the more I thought about it, it's just, you have a new wave of, you know, young guys coming out of college, guys coming out of juniors. You know, I wasn't drafted. You know, it just becomes that much harder. Even if you were still playing pros, like, it just becomes that much harder because, again, there's a whole new influx of people coming in.
Yeah.
And I try to look at it just more holistically of, and also, I think also what really helped me is I realized during that whole recovery process that I definitely had more concussions than I acknowledged. That's just an injury that you don't want to screw around with.
Yep.
Yeah.
So what after that? What'd you do? So battled with, like, probably, you know, some shit for a little while. And then what was your first, like, you know, kind of job after hockey?
Yeah. So I ended up at Eaton Vance Mutual Fund Company. Really just the two trains of thought were any of my friends at the time either got into commercial real estate or finance. So I ended up at finance. I was there for about 7 months. Like, just entry-level job, was making like $30,000, $32,000. I loved learning about the markets and something new, but left after 7 months. I started helping coach the varsity team at Dexter with Danny Donato, Ted Donato's brother. We had Teddy's kids there.
Who played for the Bruins.
Yeah. Not a lot of people probably get that reference. And Teddy's one of his sons who is coaching there now, plays for the Wild. Wait,
love your hockey enthusiasm. You're dropping first names like Teddy, Bobby, Larry, Jimmy, expecting the millions of viewers of the Superpowers podcast to know who the fuck they are. Some people, you know, maybe the last name or the team next time. Thank you.
Yep, noted. and so I started helping coach the varsity team out. And I'm within my first year, stopped playing hockey. I was still relevant to them playing at BC and playing pro. They're all asking me about, you know, doing drills them after practice, what to eat before and after games. As the season was ending, you know, what should I be doing during the spring training? Yeah. And then a couple, it was actually Teddy Donato, former Bruin, head Harvard hockey coach. He asked me, because his kids are on the team. Jack and Ryan came and was like, hey, you know, could we work out with you? And so that my parents' base, you know, the basement I had was telling you about, they just started shuffling down this little chute after school. I'd work out with them. The fun part I was having with it was, you know, I created this Google folder, this Google Docs where we had their workouts. We track like their shots, how many pucks they're shooting, minutes spent stick handling. You know, we do leadership stuff. They'd set goals. And then all of a sudden this little tooth thing with Teddy's kids coming down the basement turned into 20 kids, 30 kids. And then by the time summer rolled around, I had about 100 kids signed up for this program. Wow. I was going between two different gyms. This guy let me use this other gym he had. Wow. I'm just going back and forth between my parents and this guy's gym, training these kids. And at the time, I love the coaching and the mentoring and that stuff. But at the time, like, my wheels are more spinning, like, you know, this virtual coaching thing. Kids are always on their phones. How do we use their phone to really impact them? Yeah. And then I got connected to these two guys, Rob and Chris. They were both more seasoned tech executives. One was a CEO, CTO. Chris's kids played hockey, so I got connected to him through a friend or one of the parents that I was training his kids. And long story short, this guy Rob had built an in-house platform, and this is 2013, 2014, 2015. So just for context of like Slack and Google Docs and like where we are.
Yeah.
He said, hey, you should connect with Rob. Rob built this thing to manage the software team here at our company. He's been thinking about wanting to see where else this could be used. Cliff notes of it all, I became that first guinea pig. I took this because Google Docs wasn't working for me anymore, with hundreds of kids on this thing. I took this thing. I was able to customize it. It was also in an app at the time. I could put in how many pucks they shot. All their workouts were in there. We could communicate, send notifications. Essentially, think of Slack, but, you know, before it's time and for, you know, more for sports and stuff. Fast forward that track a little bit. Chris, Rob, and I, those two guys as mentioned, ended up becoming partners and starting this company called Driven, which at the time I was like, you know, I was at BC. We had all of our communications in like 17 different places. You know, I had Teddy's kids with me. So we took it to Harvard hockey program, to the BC hockey program, and just said, hey, use this for the season. And it just became their operating system for all things communication, tracking data, even as simple of a thing as like what they wanted to eat after a meal on the road.
So Matt, what I'm hearing is you were, obviously your coaching program exploded organically. You had a pain point based on tools that were not sort of being complementary to what your needs were. And then you saw an opportunity along with some friends to expand and scale it to other hockey programs.
Yeah.
So Chris, that's what you heard. What I heard was that they created Slack, and instead of you know, focusing on like engineers, you know, for a multi-billion dollar industry, they decided to focus on college hockey programs. That's what I heard.
Doesn't sound very good to the way you heard it. But I guess, to be black and white about, yeah, I guess that's what we did. We had an insight that, you know, this thing that I took and customized, other people could use it. And we looked at, you know, pro and college teams as just a great segment where, you know, they were all on pen and paper. You know, Coach York would cut out newspaper clippings and tape them to the whiteboard. You know, we'd have practice plans that would be taped to the board. This essentially housed everything. And fast forward that, we, you know, fortunately, we raised a little bit of money. We built a sales team. We were hiring current and former athletes, you know, so we hired some other hockey players who are still playing, and, you know, they're able to sell under their channels. We hired an Olympic rower who sold into all the rowing programs in the college programs. The fun part, or maybe not so fun part of that story, was about 3 years into it, you know, Chris, this guy, we just weren't eye to eye on stuff. You know, not to make it personal or anything like that. We didn't really see eye to eye, had a little bit of a falling out. Again, I was just, I look back on it, it's like, I've learned a lot. Like, I wasn't a great communicator. I hadn't really evolved as a leader or as an entrepreneur yet. And there's definitely things I learned from that, but essentially decided to leave just because I didn't think it was the right fit for me anymore. And I just wasn't that excited about it and what was going on. And
this was your first sort of foray into, I know we, you know, there have been some experiences when you were younger before your BC days, but this is like your kind of first entrepreneurial co-founder. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, what did you, any interesting insight or learnings or sort of disasters outside of maybe not, you know, people's everything, right? So those things happen, but anything that it sounds like you got the bug at that stage as far as building stuff.
So what were you asking though? What did I learn from that?
Yeah, just first? Like, that was your first entrepreneurial experience in building a company with other people. What did that feel like? And at that stage, did you kind of realize that you were going to, you know, start building other companies?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the biggest insight, I think, it's one of my favorite quotes. It's a Steve Jobs quote, and I'll just paraphrase it, but essentially just says, you know, sometimes you grow up and you get told the world is the way that it is, and you just live inside these boxes and don't bounce into the walls too much and just kind of live a nice life. And that's great for some people, and there's nothing wrong with that. Meaning, you know, if it's just have a, you know, a 9-to-5 job or something like that, and it's not meant to make being an entrepreneur, you know, better than anything else. But he says, if you realize that life can be, you know, broader than that, meaning you can change it, you can mold it, you can influence it, you can shape it, you can create things that other people use. And when you realize that, you'll never be the same. And that's kind of when I, going through that, and I think seeing my dad too, and seeing his trucks, you know, around the streets of Boston, things like that, it's kind of like, okay, like you can create things that either people use or services people use. And, you know, going through Driven, and then actually doing it firsthand, not just seeing my dad or other people, but doing it firsthand and seeing, okay, we have this app that we created, and the Bruins are using it, the Celtics are using it, Boston College teams are using it, like pretty cool teams. I don't know if any of them are still using it today, but that was really cool. And to have these conversations and to go in these locker rooms and, you know, Notre Dame and some really cool teams, it's just like, holy shit, like
what was your motivation then? Sometimes founders generally, you know, for their first gig, chase money and the paycheck and the exit. Nothing wrong with that, I guess. But what was your motivation, if you recall?
I think, you know, one of the things you asked me to think about too is just like when I was a kid, did I have any early signs of like, I opened up a lemonade stand, right? You know, whatever. I didn't. I was just so obsessed with hockey. Literally, wow. All I did was hockey. And I was fortunate where, you know, I've had, you know, some small summer jobs and things like that, but nothing to the point. Like, I think what I loved about it so much so is just like the passion that I had for it is just, I didn't really think so much about money. And obviously that's an outcome if you're successful and you can achieve that. I remember, even just, you know, one point, you know, during the Driven, you know, I was making like my salary is like $70,000. And I was like, holy shit, like that's so much money. I've never made that much money before. So it wasn't better so than, much.
Better than 38,000.
Yeah, well, 32. It was a bump up from 32. And it was definitely a bump up from minor league hockey. Yeah, I think it was just like the passion, just like loving what you're doing and also having, you know, the sales team that we had was, there were a couple of some of my buddies from BC that played hockey, like some of my best friends. It was just the passion. It was just feeling like I did when I was playing hockey, I think.
Matt, whatever happened with that company and that business?
It still exists. To be honest, I don't keep tabs on it by any means. I don't want to, I guess, probably speak too much to it because I don't know a whole lot. It does exist. I hope it ends up doing well. I'm sure, you know, this isn't a good situation, the pandemic, just given that, you know, this is probably something that teams don't need right now. But Chris and Rob have continued to run it. I know they raised additional funding, and obviously I wish them the best. At the time, it was a really hard thing to go through, and I think it was frustrating for all three of us. You know, I've since talked to Chris and have bumped into him and had nice conversations and caught up. So it's, yeah.
Yeah. Did you have a conversation, or did you have like a hockey fist fight somewhere in like Southie?
You know, it's funny. I don't know. I guess it doesn't matter if I share something.
Would you have won that? We don't care. Would you have won the fight? That's all Bill and I want to know.
Yeah, actually, just to that funny story, I remember. So essentially, like the net of it all was like I called for a change of leadership, which, you know, again, I think I was 23, 24, 25. I don't know how young I was. You know, Chris and Robert, I don't know, they're in their 50s, I think, you know, two guys that are, you know, seasoned executives. And it was, you know, we had one board member who was chair of the board, Chris and Robert on the board. I was just a board observer because I was inexperienced. And I called for a change of leadership. It was one of the things I learned was just the importance of communication and just like being able to have honest, direct, radically transparent communication, say it straight so it doesn't come out crooked. I wasn't that good at it at the time. I think I'm pretty good at it now, getting better. But I remember that was so, I remember I had like my notebook, I had notes, I had written down like what I wanted. It's like, you probably would have laughed at me watching this. Like, is this kid serious right now? But I remember essentially just like suggesting that we change the leadership of Driven. And after that,
amazing.
It was a pretty, it was a pretty amicable conversation. And I just remember, like, I remember our board at the time was John Burns, and he, I think at the end said something just like, you know, I appreciate everybody just like being able to, you know, handle this conversation maturely. And I was just like, yeah, Chris, I appreciate you not reaching across the table. And he was like, you kidding me? If I did, you would have beat the shit out of me.
it sounds like you had, I don't know if you guys watched Succession, but yeah. I feel like you had, like, there was a huge episode where it was the vote of no confidence. And either, you know, when you take the vote of no confidence, it only goes one way or another, right? It's all black and white. Either, you know, changes are made or you're out, you know, and by the way, sometimes it, you know, you probably saved yourself a couple of years by doing that, right? You might have like spent a couple of years, maybe, you know, wasted a couple of years.
Wait to hear what I did next.
Oh, tell us what you did next.
I always just joke with people. When people ask me like how I ended up starting Being with Kevin, I have a really different path to doing this. So I then had the bright idea to start a business with my fiance, my ex-fiance, I should say. So that's the summary of that.
All right.
I read up a little bit on who your ex-fiance is. And I told Chris, I was like, I can spend 50 minutes talking about being engaged to a you know, gold Olympic gymnast.
Yeah, we can, maybe we're going to do another episode about that. But you know, yeah, we met, you know, if there's any gymnastics fans, so I used to be engaged to Nastia Luke, and I don't say that as like to get cool points by any means, but you know, she was a really, really, really insanely successful athlete. She won the Olympics in gymnastics in 2008. And we met through a mutual friend, and we got engaged really quickly.
I'm always curious on the mutual friend connection piece. You got to tell us the story. Who, it doesn't, if you want to share the name, great. If not, but what was it? It was just like, hey, you guys need to meet, and why? Like, what did she?
Any friend that introduces you to a woman who won an Olympic gold medal,
yeah,
you know, is like the best friend in the world.
Why are you on the show? Why are you on the show?
And if he's accepting spots, I will be your best friend.
Yeah. So this girl, Quilty, who went to BC, she became friends with her when they were living in New York, and we were at, me and some of my BC teammates were at Quilty's engagement party, and Nasty was there, and I guess for some cool points, Nasty asked her who I was, as I caught her eye a little bit, and then we just started chatting. She kind of connected us after the thing, and and we obviously took a quick liking to each other. We got engaged after like 9 months, and which maybe, I don't know if that gives any indication to what my superpowers are, or maybe my opposite of superpowers might be, but, she was with me during all the stuff with Driven. I probably trivialized it, but that really sucked going through all that stuff. Like in my perspective, it's like, here's my baby Driven, and kind of felt like it was just like getting ripped away from me at the time. And you know, she went through all that with me, and then, you know, given that her gymnastics, and we both obviously have a passion in just mentoring young athletes and inspiring the next generation of athletes, we started a company called Grander, which Chris is familiar with. That's actually how Chris and I first met, and it was a really cool company. We essentially, you know, envision yourself being a young hockey player, young gymnast, you know, being in an app, having access to Olympics, Olympians, coaches, mentors, trainers, content series, other gymnasts or other hockey players. It was almost like your little, like, Disneyland inside an app for an athlete. And, you know, we built a community of like 20, 30,000 gymnasts at the time. You know, we had other Olympians. We were doing like cool content series with, you know, UCLA gymnastics and things like that. Long story short, one, app businesses are really hard to build and scale, and to all that stuff aside, but also then, you know, our relationship wasn't going well. And, you know, I think it's obviously, it probably doesn't need to be said, but running a business with your fiance, who you're also in the process of ending your engagement with, isn't a good recipe for success.
Bill, these were I could find the text or the emails just sort of supporting a lot of these facts. I got to tell you a fun story, Bill, and for our audience. I got a LinkedIn message from Matt, and I'll never forget it, because there's a lot of LinkedIn spam and sort of crazy. That's a whole podcast in itself, Bill, is just share the the subject lines of like, you know, whatever. And I got this message, but there's so many points around what he knew about me or some of the things I was doing in early stage investing and just how thoughtful that it would just felt right to kind of respond. He drove down, you know, three hours with his fiance at the time. And we met at Rye Bar and Grill for like an hour and 45 minute powwow session. And Bill, you're going to appreciate this more than anybody, is I knew there are a couple of things that I wanted to understand around the business a little better, but I knew it wasn't something that was right for me and all the things that Matt said, consumer facing and good at scale, and we're not going to go into it, but I knew I loved him. And I don't think I ever said black and white, like whatever you do next, I'm going to back, but this is the first time you're hearing it, Matt. Like that's absolutely the truth. I loved him and we stayed in touch for about, you know, Matt may have the timeline better than me, 18 months or 2 years when he first kind of shared Beam, which we're going to get into. And obviously off we went. So I think there's a lot of interesting things to learn from, even for myself, but also for anyone that is going to watch the show as relates to, you never know who you're going to find. You never know who you're going to meet. And you got to be super open-minded.
To your credit too, Chris, just to touch on that really quickly. And also just responding, right, to messages like that. You never know what comes out of stuff like that. And I would say there's a very, very small bucket of people that I, you know, in earlier in my career, even still, I'm, you know, I'm still early into it, where I reach out to someone just cold turkey and they reply. You know, you're one of very few people that reply and it blossoms into this thing. And that's been a lesson just for me too. And that's a really cool thing too, is just like, who would have thought, right?
Amazing.
And then I'm going to my first Vegas club with you. What was it called? I didn't even know it was a club.
So Bill will also appreciate that. And we have a lot of our viewers come from ad tech and media. So CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, in January, a few years back, Matt and I are now reconnecting. And Bill, I think it was the Monday night Media Link event. And I'm obviously so busy, double, triple booked, and he's in town. And I'm like, dude, just come to Marquee or whatever the hell it was. He shows up at like 10:30. I'm double fisted, you know, like half tilted. And we're trying to have like a somewhat normal conversation as he's standing on a booth, not drinking. And Matt, I'm actually surprised from that point that you didn't just sort of delete the digits and run for the hills. But I'm glad you stuck with me. Because anyone who's in Vegas, generally I get judged pretty aggressively.
I'll dig up. We have a selfie that we took. We'll have to dig that up. Maybe that'll be the photo for the episode.
That's it.
And I got to imagine, like, well, having partied with Chris many times across a lot of different industry events, you know, Chris also kind of starts getting a little touchy-feely when he has a few. So I can imagine, like, Chris, like, all over you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The best thing everyone has going for them is with the pandemic is that there's no touchy feel anymore. I have to get through that.
What happened to that? But I actually love that business as an idea. You know,
it was one of those things that when you talk about it, whether it be to an investor, to someone, a parent, an athlete, in concept, it's like, oh yeah, that should definitely exist in this world. The reality of it is just, again, like there's all these things about like apps and, you know, people getting people to come in and actually use it and all those different things. But in theory, it's like, yeah, the world needs more mentors. And that's what was exciting about it. It's also, you know, it's so deeply rooted in stuff that I'm passionate about and love doing. But it was also, you know, all the personal stuff aside, it was a hard business. No business is easy, but that was a tough business to grow and scale. Again, we did build something really cool.
Matt, you know what's interesting now, though? I mean, I would say for our venture firm alone, we've probably seen sort of 20 coaching-like companies come inbound. So you could argue that you were actually ahead of the curve as relates to understanding that sort of people with experience and these celebrity types like your ex-fiance and these young gymnasts. Bill has two daughters, you know, aspiring and learning. Agreed, that all makes sense. Coaching is a sort of I don't know who the winners are, but it's actually a really big, in the last 12 months from our perspective, has been a big boom. So there's someone's going to figure it out.
Agreed.
Yeah. So what? Right, so now
so that's another learning experience. By the way, I have met a couple of, you know, husband, wife, you know, founder companies. And the first question I always ask is like, what the fuck were you guys thinking? You know? And the funny part is, it's almost universal. Everyone says, even the successful ones say, yeah, I'd never do it again. You know?
I wouldn't say that. I think it's all personalities. It's all, it's like any partnership, right? I started Beam with one of my best friends, which isn't all that different than starting that with one of your, you know, your significant other. So I wouldn't be opposed. I would approach it differently. But I, you know, if you have the right chemistry, you have the right working relationship. I just don't think on a professional side, I don't know that we were a good match on that side either. And it's not a negative on her. It's not a negative on me. It's more, I think it's more just like black and white. We work differently.
Yeah. So Matt, now I have to assume, and I know even from our personal relationship, you know, there was a period where we probably weren't talking as much. You've gone through the company sort of not working. You're separating, which we don't need to go deeper there. I assume that you're at a point of sort of inflect, like can't be a great point of time in your life where you're like, what am I going to do next? And so I want to talk a little bit about that. And I want to talk a little bit about you and Kevin, the other co-founder, and sort of the origins of Beam, because we are definitely going to talk about some Beam today.
Yeah. So Kevin went to BC, played baseball. We were, I would say, more just acquaintances there. He was an awesome pitcher, played professionally as well in the White Sox organization. He was a really high draft pick, had Tommy John surgery, had a bunch of other stuff that he, you know, was forced to retire early. And we overlapped an apartment building in Boston. I don't know the years, but we both were done playing hockey. We were both, you know, he was in sales at VMware, and we instantly just became best friends. And right away, you know, we're doing workouts and CrossFit and running. We did a marathon together, and we just all of a sudden we're just like bonded by this idea, like, oh, we should do something together at some point. And this is probably 4 years prior to Beam. And he also just played a unique role just in my life. You know, a lot of stuff with Nasty and getting out of the engagement and, you know, just supporting me and being there. And at the same time, too, in his path, he's doing really well at VMware, but is also not passionate about it. And so he's kind of in a stage of his life where he's making a lot of money, but at the same time, it's like, I hate my friggin' job. It's, you know, doesn't really light me up anymore. And here I am getting out of a business and a relationship, blank canvas in my head. Now I'm coming in my mind. I can look at it as like, I just failed twice. Driven was a failure. Grander was a failure. You know, I really want to go start something from scratch again. And, you know, all the stories like how and why we got into Beam and CBD and all that stuff, but we just had so much conviction about what we're going to do. And we just went after it a million miles per hour. And just recreated and launched Beam. It was interesting though. We both, I guess, say like had sort of like a desperation of like, okay, if I'm going to do a third thing again and try this third thing, like it has to fucking work. I can't fail. And then Kevin is kind of coming as like, I hate my job. I'm like craving to do something I'd be more passionate about, do it with someone that I love, all those things. So we both came out with these similar but unique, you know, points in our life.
Hey, Matt, so during all of this, like particularly when you're doing a startup, you know, like how are you paying the bills? Like, how are you making money? Even when you started Beam, like what was the income?
So I took a job, when I started seeing, I just was very scrappy. But I took a job when I realized that we were breaking up and I realized that, this company wasn't going anywhere. I took a job at this company called Jiffy. It's essentially like, it's like an Uber for home maintenance, and they had just launched in Boston. One of my good buddies was the GM of Boston. It's a Toronto-based company, and I was like, I just got to do something. I got to start making some money. I got to get my life unwrapped from this relationship, because everything I was doing was involved in that relationship at the time. You know, where she was kind of doing her own thing, and you know, she had her own personal brand. So long story short, Dave called me up and said, "Hey, you know, I'm looking for someone to help us with some marketing. Do you have anybody in mind?" And I was just like, "I'll sign up." And, you know, again, it was probably more of like an entry level thing. They were looking for someone probably right out of college. And I jumped in and I did it for like 3 or 4 months. And while doing all of that, we were getting everything ready to launch Beam, and at the early stages of deciding if we wanted to. And then probably like 2 months into that was like, okay, let's do this. So we started to put actual action steps in and launch the product. I got fired like 3 days before our first product of Beam. I don't think I haven't shared that story that much, but
I want to hear exactly how you got fired.
Yeah, so I kind of feel bad, and I hope no one from Jiffy watches this or listens to this, but I just need to make some money. I like Jiffy. I like the guys there. It's a great company. And we just used them today to move something. And it's a great service, but I really was just there to make some money and just buy myself some time. Which it is what it is. I just wasn't really putting the effort into what I was supposed to be doing. I joke sometimes I had to put like lists together and like find out like email, you know, communities and different organizations. I had a virtual assistant in India who was, you know, pulling all these emails and emailing people and like doing these, like, I would say like time consuming tasks for me. Meanwhile, Kevin and I are getting ready to, you know, launch Beam. And I had a performance review and I got fired on that. And then I just kind of took it off the chin. It was humbling and no one wants to get fired.
So you were attempting to arbitrate your own job?
What's that?
You were basically arbitraging your own job. You were like, outsourcing it to someone else. That's kind of genius.
Every entrepreneur has done that. Every single entrepreneur on the planet has done that.
Yeah, I guess maybe I shouldn't have gone on. But yeah, I was just trying to be creative. I knew I was either going to get fired or I was obviously going to have to quit once we launched Beam. And I just kind of laugh looking at it now. And I took, you know, again, like I remember having my call and just like, we're going to let you go. And here's why. And I kind of had my own, you know, comments. And it wasn't like the easiest job at the time either, just given certain challenges and things like that and all that other stuff. But all that stuff aside, it was just kind of like, okay.
It sounds like you were, I've been in one of those situations where I was like gone for a 3-hour lunch working on my, when I was trying to do like acting when I first moved to New York, and the woman just like a magazine called Art Bite, if you could believe it. And literally I was gone for 3 hours. And as soon as I got back, she was like, you can just keep going. You're not coming back in here.
Yeah.
It was a bridge. I'm just trying to envision you at the table. Like, you know, those people that like shuffle the papers when people walk by at 5 o'clock, like,
yeah,
you know, it's just,
yeah. that would be me like sending in like my like weekly reports and updates and just kind of like, I would say fabricate. I did do some good and I helped them with some stuff. It was only like 3 or 4 months, so it wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah, just a little. We're not gonna do it. So now, Matt, let's get into Beam. Tell our audience what Beam is, a little bit about kind of, yeah, how big the business is, the products, just kind of top line, just in 2 minutes. What is Beam?
Yeah, so I'm sure a lot of people have either heard of CBD or THC or just know that this cannabis space or cannabinoids is blowing up right now. So our insight, what Beam is, we're a CBD company, but really what we saw when we launched this was we saw an opportunity to really imagine the CBD space by creating an athletic, active lifestyle, more wellness-focused brand versus what we saw a lot of just medicinal and medical-looking things. And we've tried to bring a lot of innovation around the brand, about our products, how you consume them, what other ingredients are inside of them, and really look at Beam as essentially is just a performance company in the sense like everybody can be better at whatever it is that they're doing, whether you're an athlete, an entrepreneur, a business person, a mom, whoever. We're building, designing wellness products that help you in certain areas around sleep, recovery, focus, energy, balance in your life. As we look at those as main pillars that will impact your performance or how you show up or how you can, so you feel, if you feel better, you'll be able to do a better job at what you're doing. And, it's been about a year and a half or so since we launched. We initially raised 800,000 friends and family round. We then this past fall just closed a $5 million round, which C2B participated in and has added in some additional funding into it as well. We've grown really quickly. We were really fortunate. I would say probably one of the cool things is, you know, it's beyond what we thought we'd probably do with under 2 years, just in terms of we have so many cool athletes and people that are involved in the brand that.
Matt, can you share some of the athletes and people that are involved?
Yeah. We recently announced Danica Patrick, who's both a partner and also investor. Billy Horschel, who's a top 20 PGA golfer. Matt Frazier, who is a top CrossFit athlete. He's won the games the last 4 years, the big Nike athlete. CrossFit's a space where we have numerous athletes in as well. It's been really cool, and we're really fortunate again to be working with so many cool people. You know, we have 11 full-time employees now. We have a handful of contractors that work with us. We ship all across the country. Yeah, it's been, you know, we're growing significantly, just like in terms of the business and revenues and stuff like that. You know, we're fortunate to be doing well during the pandemic, just given, you know, we're well capitalized to take this on. We also are a wellness company, we're e-com. It's really cool to be where we are. We have so much hard work to do.
How did you guys focus in? So you knew you wanted to do something together. How did you focus in on CBD?
Kevin and I were training for a marathon together, and we were just reading about CBD because we're both wellness enthusiasts. We're always trying to learn and understand what we can do to just feel better, be happy, healthy, whole. And we ended up trying some stuff. We're really standoffish at first as being athletes and not knowing what the heck this was. But long story short, we found profound benefits in our personal lives for different things that we had going on. And then I would say, it became obsessed with practicing and shooting 20,000 pucks in the off season in the basement. We became obsessed with CBD and really saw that there's this, it's going to be the biggest health trend that goes on the next decade. Nobody's doing this in this more consumer brand space. And we can do something really cool here. And then we just jumped in and we attacked it.
Now, one question is coming after the, out of the B Grander, which obviously was also another consumer company. You could almost argue that you wouldn't go back into consumer since you just can't have had an consumer experience. Definitely you're selling product versus kind of, a more commerce experience, but
yeah.
Was there any pause at that stage? I know you and I talked about it in early stages when we were coming through the diligence.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I, one of the things I think is, if you fail well, you can learn so much. And, you know, again, I look at like black and white, like those things just didn't work out. But I would say, especially Grander, I mean, from the driven standpoint, the stuff I learned just around leadership and communication, picking good partners, again, not saying anything negative or picking, you know, bad people or anything, not the right partners for me. Grander, you know, Nastia, I got this front row seat of just like how the whole influencer world worked. You know, she obviously was constantly working with different brands, consumer brands, posting on Instagram.
Right.
We lived with Sean Johnson and Andrew East. Sean was one of her teammates. You know, they're also influencers and doing some really cool stuff. And so I've learned and I've met people, not just like, you know, I met people through her network, but because of what we were doing, we met some really cool people. So the contacts and just like the education, like building the brand, all of that transcended. I wouldn't do an app again. I'd have to be really convinced something, but I that's a whole different conversation. But the consumer side, I think, is just so awesome because what I love about it is just that you get to, see like the result of your product or the experience someone has by using your product. I think is really cool.
It's a very rare opportunity, whereas whether you're in MarTech or SaaS or whatnot, B2B, very healthy, great businesses, Bill's running one on his own. But yeah, like you said, when you see people that are actually like very rare to be able to touch a product and use it and people put it in their kitchen. One thing, Matt, I want to ask is, In the context of CBD and the stigma and how you feel that's changing, obviously THC is getting legalized. Beam does not have any THC, but still maybe even a couple years ago, the idea of CBD, what does that mean? Or is it safe or is it cool to talk about? Yep. You know, obviously I probably sound biased saying this, but, you know, even with CNN writing a big, big article, I'm just seeing more and more ink around the idea of this is more sort of commonplace and more norm. Can you talk a little bit about that adjustment in the market and also people's perception?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that we take on with Beam, is in this industry in particular, people do judge a book by its cover. They make a first impression based off just the appearance of it. And we hear that over and over again, you know, by talking with potential influencers and partners and consumers, if they come in, you know, come and reach with one of our products. And then there's so many, you know, cannabinoids and all these different long, you know, the endocannabinoid system. You need to understand how people talk and how people digest information. And And then also just understanding how it's going to work within your body. And so, yeah, it's so misunderstood. One, because CBD, THC, cannabis, people don't know that hemp is also part of the cannabis family. People just think of marijuana. They just think that CBD gets you high because THC gets you high. There's really what we're trying to do is just educate and be pioneers just in the category of, you know, how do you reimagine the CBD thing, which sounds kind of like taboo, but also just to be like a collagen or fish oil where really it should just be part of your everyday lifestyle, given the benefits, how it works within your body. And how you actually understand that through, or break that down for people through branding, through packaging, through ingredients, through explaining how it works. That's the hard part. And I think that's what we're really, really keen on trying to do. And I think I've done a good job so far, and I really focus on doing that going forward.
But so I don't know if this happens to you, but I've spoken to a bunch of people and they all kind of say the same thing. Ever since this, I'm a great sleeper. Ever since this, you know, COVID crisis pandemic has gone about, I wake up every night, you know, number one, I wake up every night, you know, 3 a.m., 3:30, 4 o'clock. I'm up like an hour. The other part is I'm having these like incredible, vivid, crazy dreams. And multiple people recently have told me you should try CBD, you know, for sleep. And, you know, and these are people, you know, that I would have, you know, like, you know, I would have never thought, you know, I feel like CBD is becoming mainstream. People are starting to recognize, hey, it's not marijuana. It doesn't get you high. You get the effects without, you know, without those. So, I mean, you know, incredible foresight on your part to think about that years ago, particularly because, like, I think someone like you would not go down the road of like marijuana, but would go down the road of CBD.
Yeah, I've never used anything with THC in it before. I've never smoked or anything. Shocker, probably, right, Chris? Either is Kevin, and so that's why Chris is floored by that new information. But that's what, you know, our friends and family laugh at. It's like, of all people, you guys are starting a cannabis company. But that's what's also so fun about it. It makes it so challenging is, again, like, you know, you have this emerging market. We have an opportunity to destigmatize it. It's also the fun part is I don't know that we'll ever have a chance to, you know, launch a business, be a part of an emerging market. At the same time, I can't think of the scenario where this would happen. No big players are in the space right now because of all the grayness and the regulation. So you don't have the Cokes and the all those people in the world in this category. Yeah. Now they're watching it, and I'm sure they'll be ready to jump in once things, you know, the regulations and the FDA and everything become more black and white. But you have this emerging market, but essentially you have all these young companies, you know, fighting for market share. And that's also a really interesting opportunity with it all too.
Yeah.
Bill, if you haven't seen their kind of online presence or Instagram, both aesthetics and marketing, Matt, I forget some of the names of the people behind it. Just incredible as far as kind of both the packaging, but also the delivery of how you can use it. And whether it's in your coffee or in your smoothie or in your shake or whatnot, and sort of the imagination of how you can consume this. Again, only in the last year have I even considered where and how people can take CBD in a way that's, you know, contrary to how you would normally kind of intake something. I think it's fascinating.
Yep. I gotta tell you, regardless of, you know, the three businesses you were involved in, they all have great names. Those are three really good names. You know, I think part of the struggle now is, you know, you go online and try to like register a domain, nothing's available, you know, so getting a good company name is really hard.
Yeah. Yeah. It, Driven, we were presented a book of names, from an agency. And I know that was when I was really gravitated towards the app, which I think the rest of the team was too. Grander. So it's interesting. I remember I was watching Shark Week one summer, and a grander essentially is a Mako shark over like 1,000 pounds. So they're like, a grander is like the 1% of Mako sharks, or I think maybe even just maybe marlins or like some other type of fish too. And the idea and the analogy with that was, as I was watching, I was like, oh, that, holy shit, that's a really cool name, Grander. And it essentially, it's like becoming that 1%. It, like the Mako sharks, like they're so hard to find. They're very, very rare. But when they come out, it's like unbelievable. And so that's sort of how Grander came to be. And then with Beam, a lot of it was just our goals around, we wanted to be clean, simple, approachable, friendly, you know, something that emulates our brand, our values, the benefits of the products, you know, stability, support, energy. And it was just so simple and friendly that it just like, it just resonated and made sense. It's a very uncommon name in this category of things. You see a lot of canna and plays on the word cannabis in a lot of CBD names. And then Chris, to your point too, at the time, even still, you see a lot of companies that, you know, vape pens and bath bombs and essentially just a lot of like white label, private labeling, people not really considering form factor and how people will consume these products. We've tried to reimagine, you know, a CBD wellness company, both not just in the branding, everything, but also like, how do people consume products? If we want to become an everyday supplement and kind of get out of this cannabis category, you know, is they're simple insights, but it's also just, again, looking at like, what are people's behaviors and how do we integrate into that? And again, Beam is part of it, just the name of it, right? You don't think of weed and drugs and things like that.
I think that's right, but I also think it's attributed to the best, it has to be connected to the concussion. You've just been able to draw these incredible names because you've taken that pounding years back. So you see, like, you don't make it to the NHL with the big contract, Matt, but you're able to come up with incredible great companies.
Let me also ask another question though. So your ex-fiance, was she like, what was her thing? Was it floor? Was it the uneven bars? Or was it the balance beam?
Some people have asked me that, and I thought that's what you were going to say, Chris. I have gotten that a couple of times. I can honestly say, and I've said this, it has nothing to do with gymnastics. but Beam was one of her better events.
Hey,
maybe subconsciously, yeah.
So hey, Matt, we're gonna kind of wrap up here. I did bring you something just to make you feel comfortable, and I want you to see if, like, is there a way, like, if I do tries, Bill and I?
Yeah. Okay.
So I'm gonna actually go to the last and final comment for any viewers who ever want to see the Matt Lombardi CrossFit. It is just the easily one of my top two or three favorites on Instagram, and I follow some fun people where hours upon hours of CrossFit, obviously in the gym prior to pandemic, and now Bill lifting furniture, lifting refrigerators and couches. I've seen you in like empty parking lots lifting tires. I'm like, where the fuck did he get all this? So we're gonna close out a little bit to understand what your fitness regimen is daily. How many hours do you work out? How do you get the motivation around it? Is it leading to some specific goals? Is it just your happiness? But we're gonna conclude on this.
Yeah. The highest and level.
Bob, just ignore me while you're. Go ahead.
Yeah. No. Just crank them out. I got into CrossFit right after Nasty and I broke up, and it wasn't like I'm going through this crisis and I was, you know, so, you know, it was a difficult thing to go through. And I kind of just got pulled into CrossFit. I've been a fan of it and just been following it, but I never got into it just cause I didn't know any of the skills. And I just wanted to go work out and not learn how to do jump ropes. Finally just said, F it. I'm just going to go. End up loving it. I think my favorite thing with all of it is just like, I'm 32 now. I'm in way better shape than I was when I was 22 playing pro hockey. I was actually just telling my mom about this last night. I went for a run down here in Hingham, and there's used to be a 2 mile loop around where Nasty and I live. Like, I could barely do that at like not a very fast pace. And what I loved about it all is just like, holy shit, like I didn't know I could do these things to my body in terms of running and walking on my hands and all these crazy things. So my regimen right now is just a mix of CrossFit and long distance running. Long distance being anywhere, you know, 5 to 10 miles, 5 to 12 miles. And honestly, I could barely run a couple miles before all this. And you know, yeah, it's been, I just have fun with it. And it's like, why, you know, posting them on Instagram, you know, it's really just been for having fun. Also, just trying to be a good reflection of like the brand that we're building. And, you know, Kevin, same thing. Kevin is an insane endurance athlete. He's done a few Ironmans. Like he just goes for, you know, 15-mile runs at, you know, 7:30-minute pace. But really part of it is like, one, it's our passion. It's very authentic just who we are as people. But also just like, we also want to be representatives of the business that we're building. And yeah. I can also say, you know, I'm single now and I can just be as selfish with my time as I want to. Cause I have a leg up on some people there. Yeah. I mean, I try to, at least an hour a day. But what's cool with CrossFit is like, it's a very intense hour. I go between like, I'll do the workouts pretty hard and push myself. Not every time do I go to the point where I'm like, I kill myself in it. But that's the part of like, I think training, getting better is you kind of have a balance of like, go really hard. And then like, you know, you're crawling after because you went so hard. Same thing with running. But yeah, I love it. It's just,
I'm going to say something that's going to come out weird, but it's not meant to be. I sleep better after I watch you on Instagram. Like that's how tired I am for us.
Yeah. Yeah. I have some good ones today. I have a bike here now, a barbell at my parents' house. I'm going to roll it outside and get some good stuff and I'll post it later.
Post it later. We're going to get Bill on there too. So Bill, Matt,
one last question. Because you said your sister initially got you into hockey. What did she end up doing with her life?
Yeah, so I have two older sisters. They're both great athletes. Michelle played hockey at BC as well.
Wow.
I got through school my freshman year. She was a senior, so we overlapped for a year. I got through because of her. So she listens to this, a big thank you. And she already knows that. My other sister played lacrosse at Notre Dame. You know, both obviously really good athletes. Lisa, my oldest sister, played lacrosse. She's an architect. Her and her husband had a baby a few years ago. So now she's just a rock star mom. And she, before she had the baby, she was a professor at Notre Dame. So she was teaching. And then Michelle is at State Street and she's in finance. So then they're both, I would say they're both way smarter than me. and they know awesome.
that's awesome. So now I think this has been an incredible journey, incredible ride. Love hearing the stories. I always say you learn more from your failures than you do your success. I think for our viewers, you kind of portrayed them as failures. They were just incredible learning experiences that you just built upon and built upon and got you to Beam. And maybe that's why you're having so much success with Beam. And I'm a limited partner in CTV Ventures, so I own like, I guess, a little piece. I was thinking, you know, like when you talk, you know, it seems like there's this recurring theme where it's like, oh, I was a ninth grader and I made varsity. Yay. Didn't get ice time. Boo. Transferred. Didn't know if I was going to be able to play college, but made it to college. Was a walk-on, got to BC, which, by the way, is an incredible school. Got there because of hockey. Then all of a sudden, wasn't getting playing time. Boo. Become captain. Yay. It just seems like there's this recurring theme. So, in my mind, I'm thinking about and also it seemed like what got you through was passion, you were just passionate about hockey and you were passionate about, both your startups. But then it's also a lot about determination and not giving up. So I'm trying to think of all these things in one, and it comes down to this: grit. There was a TED talk given many, many years ago about looking at successful entrepreneurs and, what is the common thread. And it wasn't about IQ. It wasn't about this. It wasn't about that. It was actually, and this is just one person. They said it was all about grit. And of all of our guests, I believe you have more grit than anyone we've actually spoken to date. So I'm going to say that's your superpower. But Chris,
I take that as a huge compliment. So thank you.
So Matt, the way it works is Bill does an incredible summary. I get to listen and then I kind of follow on in some manner. And sometimes we're kind of right on, or there's a variant spin, or I've had the opportunity to listen to him and I just sort of spell it out a little bit better. I'm actually gonna pile on to
Grant. You have a pen in your hand. Have you been taking notes, like planning?
Just a couple. I think the only thing I was gonna add is you're optimistically versatile is what kind of came to mind. You're when I think about sports and I think about the best athletes, I think about versatility, those that can kind of play variant roles and be put in different positions. I'll do everything in my power not to use Patriots analogies because people will unsubscribe from our podcast. So I'm going to still say that, but I'm going to have to just triple down on Bill's grit because I actually think that's a perfect way to summarize this conversation. And with that, Matt Lombardi from Beam, the co-founder and CEO and everything else. Follow him on Instagram. He's a smoke show. If you are a single woman and you don't get to know him soon, you're idiotic. Matt, be safe. We'll follow you later. And thanks for joining.
Thanks, guys. That was so much fun. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Matt.
Superpowers.